Speakeasy.
Words.
Lingo.
Speakeasy.
Language.
Speakeasy on ABC Radio Perth.
And it is that time of the week where we welcome Daniel Midgley, linguist and host of Talk the Talk podcast. If you haven't listened to it, I suggest you do because it's very excellent. Oh. How are you, Daniel?
I am well. You know, our episode just previous was about the words that are the hardest for you to spell, words that you can never get right.
Onomatopoeia.
And yes, that wasn't one of them. That didn't come up.
Oh, whoops.
But for every one of those that people gave us, we gave them a mnemonic, a way to remember it. So if you have trouble with separate or privilege or other words like that, you should listen. It's talkthetalkpodcast.com. Hey.
It's like Wolfman Jack. I am the words that I have to stop and think about, those two that you said.
Yep.
So separate, privilege.
Me too.
I do stop and go, oh.
Principal and principal.
The principal is your pal.
I have to think about that? I've got to think about
okay.
It.
Okay.
Yep. Capital and capital are my two. That's a pair of words that I, because they sometimes mix. There's a capital can be the capital of something else.
Yeah. So if you stop when you get to those sorts of words, then why don't you go and have a listen to that podcast and you'll be forever relieved. Let's have a chat to Daniel, who's called up. Hi, Daniel.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
My questions, I have two short ones relating to William Shakespeare.
Mm.
First one is, if Shakespeare was regarded to in the past tense, would he be William Shakespeare'd?
I have read lots of William Shakespeare'd. Although you got to do something with the will, right? It'd be would I was Shakespeare'd.
Very good.
Wow.
What's the second one?
The other question, this is the more technical one for Daniel.
Oh, boy.
We know how many, we know that William Shakespeare gave us so many phrases and words, gifted them to the English language. Are there any more modern literary figures who have done the same thing?
That is a really, really good question. You know, first of all, a caveat, maybe William Shakespeare didn't actually invent all of those words himself. He certainly was the first mention that we have of a lot of words, but because he was so prolific a writer and he was so in touch with what was going on word-wise, that would make sense. I was trying to think if there's any other author, and I think maybe no other author could really influence the English language like Shakespeare has, just because, like, I mean, could anybody sell as many records as the Beatles ever again? Because, I mean, everybody used to listen to the Beatles and now everybody listens to everything. Maybe nobody could be as big as the Beatles anymore. So maybe nobody could be as big as Shakespeare anymore. But I have maybe a couple. Tolkien. You know, a lot of different words that he wrote, you know, like I know maybe orcs wasn't one of his inventions, but he certainly did bring a lot of words in. And the other one, I think, and this is going to sound totally obvious once you hear me say this, Dr. Seuss. You know, Dr. Seuss, with his penchant for word invention, I've been reading The Lorax a lot with Miss Three at home. You know,
I am the Lorax. I speak for the trees.
Yes. And, you know, he hides what you paid him away in his snuff, his strange secret hole in his grovulous glove.
Yes.
Yeah. And down slurps the whispermophone to your ear. You know, the words have to come through a snurgly hose. Snurgly. I love the word snurgly. It describes it so well.
Yeah.
I guess some of these words aren't really in common use, but some of them are.
So yeah. Dr. Seuss is our modern day Shakespeare.
Dr. Seuss.
I tried to find out more about Dr. Seuss.
Seuss.
And
Seuss, not Zeus.
Yes.
Seuss.
I'm into Dr. Seuss. That's going to be my nickname. That's going to be my DJ.
I did try to find, it's difficult to find out much about him. I might talk to you about that off air because I think his story is a really good one to tell. Now,
the Oxford
update.
This is exciting time for you because the dictionaries update.
Happens every 3 months
and new words
never
coming.
Get sick of it. New words. Are you ready?
Yep. Okay.
Whatevs.
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 Yeah, that's pretty stock standard.
That's one of those, it is now, but it dates from about 1996. This is one of those that comes from Usenet. You know, before there was the internet, there was Usenet and everybody was messaging on message boards and that one came up there. What's another one? Oh, chillax.
Chillax.
Just made it into Oxford, but it dates from 1994 on the old Usenets. Ah, so much fun.
What's Manhattan Henge?
You know, Stonehenge, right? It's, who knows what that thing was for. It's very cool looking, but there's a certain time of the year when at the solstice, the sun shines through a place between some rocks, and that's how you know that it's the solstice. Well, this happens in New York City too, where the sun shines between the buildings, but the city isn't perfectly east-west aligned. So if you look going east, you'll see the sun, the solar disk, right between all those, that hallway of sky between the buildings. Happens a couple of days in May and a couple of days in July. This word was popularized by astronomer Neil deGrasse Tyson. So, other cities are having their own henges. There's a Montreal henge. Other big cities are doing this. So
You know there's a Stonehenge in Esperance.
I think I
did. A replica Stonehenge.
I did know that. I've never been. Have you been?
I have. I sat on the laid on the sacrificial stone.
What'd you do that for?
Well, because that's where they used to sacrifice people. But it's made to scale. Gods. It's made to scale. I've been to the real Stonehenge too. I couldn't tell the difference.
Do we know how they made it?
Using rocks from a quarry across the road from the farm that it's now on. I got the history.
They didn't haul them thousands of miles?
That no, not so like they did in the UK, no. They just popped across the farm.
I just love how henge is now a combining form. You know, we do this. We snap off bits of words and slap them onto other words. And
like gate.
Yes, like gate. Or like a lot of other stuff.
What are some of the other ones? I noticed fake news. That's pretty obvious.
Fake news. There's always been misinformation and disinformation. But around 2016, we started to notice something kind of new. People were throwing up fake stories on their websites, just invented out of whole cloth, to sort of influence elections or influence social things. So we call it fake news. Then Donald Trump came along and turned it to his own uses by using it to describe any sort of news that was contrary to him or that he disagreed with. And he emptied it of meaning at that point. Now, this is what he does. I want to point this out. We talked about the Darvo technique a little while ago. Deny, attack, reverse victim and offender.
Yep.
This is what he does. He's the most corrupt U.S. president ever. Most recently by strong-arming a vulnerable ally, Ukraine, to manufacture dirt on his domestic political rival. Now, that's corruption. So how does he explain himself? By talking about corruption. Oh, I was trying to fight or investigate corruption. So what he does, it's all projection. He's hoping that if he says corruption often enough and loud enough, that you'll hear corruption and think, oh, of his shouting instead of his actions.
Mm-hmm. So he's fighting corruption, in fact.
That's what he wants you to think.
But now,
it's all projection.
I looked at Apology Tour, which is on your list, and I immediately thought of John Farnham.
Why'd you think of John Farnham?
Well, because you know how he keeps doing farewell tours and he does a farewell tour and then he comes back 3 years later with another farewell tour.
How can I miss you when
you won't
go away?
So is the last one an apology? I'm sorry, I'm just coming back one more time and that's it. I promise.
I ran out of money. The first Apology Tour I remember was Hugh Grant.
Yes.
Remember that? When he was caught in the 90s with a sex worker?
Yes. Yeah.
He went around all the shows kind of explaining himself. I think he described himself as a monk beating himself on the head with a board or going around the town. So, but Apology Tour has been with us since about 1946. That's when it first shows up.
Who was around in 1946 apologizing? Do you know?
I don't know.
I wonder who was the first person to tour an apology.
Who was the first person to tour an apology?
What was happening in 46? Sort of Post-Second World War.
Well, I guess there were a lot of things to apologize for.
Yeah. Well, there was probably a fair bit of apology going on.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Apology. Oh, it was Hirohito.
Right. Japan.
Apology tour for Hirohito.
Right. Very interesting. What about Jedi mind trick?
Lots of Star Wars stuff going on. Yeah, so Jedi mind trick, this is not the word you're looking for. Lightsaber. Made it in, and also the Force, capital F.
Sure. It's a thing. It's a real thing.
Is it real?
Of course, the Force.
It's
in my house, it's me.
What it's like duct tape, right? It's got a light side, it's got a dark side, and it holds the universe together.
I'm going to get caught by this because I don't know it, but
go and try and pronounce it.
Abugida?
Abugida. It's a kind of writing system. There are alphabets where they write every letter. There are abjads where they only write the consonants, and then abugidas, where it's kind of syllabic, but there are bits that tell you which part is the consonant part and which part is the verb part. I just like that one because it's going to be a final term for my class in 102. So get ready, folks. I'm warning you now.
Okay. You've been warned. 7 to 7, if you have a question for Daniel Midgley, you better call quickly, 1-300-222-720. On the text, Brendan asks, where does the word booby trap come from?
A booby trap is something that you use to catch boobies, and boobies are not what you're thinking. It's a silly person, a foolish person. So if you're caught in a booby trap, you really should have known better. You're a bit of a dope.
Right. Very, very good. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
I hear people saying half past instead of half past when saying the time. ABC presenters
half
will
past.
Stop. I don't know what that means.
Does that mean you?
I don't know.
Is that you? Is that half past?
Half past.
Sometimes half past. I'm lazy. Sometimes I'm very proud.
Well, sometimes we say, it's lazy. I think it's efficient.
So is it correct or is it just lazy?
Well, it's fine. I mean, we all have a bit of laziness because we don't need to say everything completely clearly in order to get our meaning across.
That said, people do like to hear the ends of words.
Okay. Is that
correct?
Something you learned in radio training?
Well,
it annoys people.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that there are lots of words that we do use where we don't say everything. I was thinking of cupboard. Or necklace. You know, we change the sounds to make it a little bit easier, and nobody minds because eventually that's just how the word sounds. So
you mean we should pronounce the P in cupboard?
No, I am not saying that we should pronounce the P in cupboard. I'm saying if you get mad at people who say half-past, that's fine, but you should also get mad at people who say cupboard because they're doing the same exact thing, and you probably do it too.
And then that opens a can of worms.
Can of worms.
Can of worms.
Can of worms. Here's another one. This is a good one. Why do we say that someone is shooting a movie?
Yeah, and this was the one that came up last week. I did a little bit of a look at shoot, and it turns out that there are a lot of things that shoot has meant. It could mean to throw something, like a bullet, but it could mean to fall off of something, like they went up the top of the cliff and shot. Or it could have meant to make things fall down an incline, like you take all this dust and you pour it out, and it goes down a little, well, it goes down a chute, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
With a
course,
C.
Yes.
Right? And
yes.
Those words are unrelated, but they grew together. It's one of those amazing things. I think that my answer that I had last time was right. We aim cameras. Cameras have guns. Cameras and guns have triggers. But the most interesting thing for me about shooting a film is that when you look at references to it in the 1890s, it appears in quotes. That's how you know that it's kind of a new thing. They say, oh, he's shooting a movie, and that's how. But the funny thing is, you see 1890, all the quotes for shoot have quotes around them. Then you get down to the 20s, they're still using quotes around them, like it's some kind of new thing. It's been new for 30 years. By the time we get to 1927, they've dropped the quotes, so it became standard around then.
Thank you, the Midge. Thank you for your questions, everybody.
You fascinate me.
I'm fascinated by
just
you.
I learned so much from you.